in the middle of the coastline between Monterey and Morro Bay, just off of Highway 1 in California, is a primitive homestead called Dabudaj. I camped here for 4 days and had the chance to talk with the woman of the homestead, Bree Brewer. She was constantly on the move, tending to plants, picking berries, climbing rocks, and cooking. So I went on the move with her and recorded while we talked. We talked about the energy of the land and about her and her partner's vision for this place that they are co-creating. There is a fuzzy sound like white noise on this recording. A rushing creek runs through the property, and I don't know how to record clean audio next to a rushing creek, so if you have tips, please let us know through email or Facebook. But in the meantime, you can allow yourself to be transported to this place next to the clean spring water as it rushes down through the valley into the Pacific in this pristine corner of California.
Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast.
We're your hosts, sisters Natalie
and Lizzie Ross.
Dream Freedom Beauty is a podcast for free spirits who yearn to connect deeply with their intuition and manifest their dream lives in harmony with the earth.
You can find the podcast show notes at dreamfreedombeauty.com.
So what's your name? What do you go by? Bree what? Just Bree or?
Oh, Brianna Brewer.
Brianna Brewer?
Yeah.
And Dabudaj?
Yeah, Dabudaj.
Okay. We're in Big Sur. Dabudage. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys have Dabudaj.com or?
We're working on that, actually.
You're working on that?
Okay. We just got it. We just got our name, domain name. We also are just gearing also more towards, like, everything we do here, we kind of think about, what did people do 100 years ago?
Awesome. I feel that.
We really try to think that here a lot.
Cool.
And it's in kind of everything we do. That's, like, part of why everything is so much recycled materials.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, you know, inherently what people did and what people had to do. Things weren't thrown away as much, you know, before. People kept them around their yard for, like, ages and found a new way to use it. And, like, a old bathtub became a planter or, you know, things like that.
Or a trough or something.
A lot of that now is thought of as, like, eco-chic and stuff. But, like, it's not really that. It's, like, kind of just the old way of doing things. Like, there was more craftsmanship that went into things before, like, finding that rad piece of wood and thinking it's beautiful and fashioning it into a beautiful piece of furniture, you know?
Mm-hmm. People will assign it eco-chic because that's the framework they see the world in. It's like, ooh, what's the style?
Yeah.
But it's funny when they get deeper into it, they see, oh, this is actually so...
It's functional.
Functional, utilitarian, and beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's all totally aligned with all the nutrients are recycled on our planet. Like, we've had the same water on our planet as we've had for as long as there's been humans. It's crazy. Like, we just keep cycling through everything.
It's the same material, the same matter.
Ancient. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we love about using this old redwood fencing and just all this recycled stuff, like I said. And what we were so adamant about keeping the trailers and all the existing stuff on the land that was already here.
Right.
Anything that had already been brought here by someone, we considered had been brought here for a reason. And we had to find some way to utilize it, or maybe it should be recycled and gone on to someone else.
Right.
It's not meant to be here anymore.
Right.
So we've kind of scrutinized everything like that here, in a way.
I see it. That's cool.
Yeah.
Where did you learn your primitive skills? I mean, you lit that fire up so quick, you were like, yeah, let's just cook on the fire. Psh, psh, psh.
I've been cooking on that fire for a long time now. I do have a little bit of Cherokee blood way back, but, like, I think that makes me have, like, an eye for certain things sometimes and a hand also for crafting in a certain way without having really been taught how to, quotes, craft.
Like, what do you craft?
I can do a lot of, like, kind of unexpected knotting or weaving things that I wouldn't guess I could figure out or do.
Mm-hmm.
Sewing things together and making it work and fasten nicely.
Mm-hmm. Just got a good sense of what it takes to put this garment together.
Or making a piece of clothing, or like working on some shoes.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. I can make jewelry.
So growing up, were you... like exposed to camping and stuff? Were you more like a city kid?
A bit, yeah. I lived in the country a little bit too.
Growing up.
I lived like on the Mesa in San Luis Obispo County, mm-hmm. in the Five Cities area, which is like the South County. And it was 36 acres of avocado trees.
Wow.
That was like raised on. And then on one side was like kind of a citrus orchard mixed with avocados.
Organic and or conventional?
I don't know what or if he was spraying much on it. It didn't need much, you know.
Okay.
It was pretty nice stuff. I don't remember seeing him spraying anything ever. He had like heat lamps that were inside the avocado glens sometimes when it was cold.
Whoa.
They
were very pampered.
Yeah. And then there was beehives, a big load of them that were in the middle of the acreage.
Yeah.
Me and my sister liked to hike out to them. We used to play in this big oak tree that was like between our house and the neighbor's house, which also, they had these two little boys. They were about me and my sister's age, so it was kind of perfect. We had some friends, even though we were in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they were boys
perfect.
Too, so it was like, you know, there was a little bit of rivalry there, the boys too.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked well. It was nice.
They keep things interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, not like we need boys to keep us interested or anything, but it's like,
it was kind of
something totally different.
Like a meeting ground in the middle, too,
yeah.
Now that I think of it. This
big,
giant oak tree.
Cool.
Because we would, like, come and meet and play there between our two houses. And it was right there, really, but it was, like, in the middle perfectly. And we had a big tree house, and my dad helped us build in there. And then in front of our house, we had, like, a basketball court.
Wow.
It was, like, a big cement pad that me and my sister could, like, do things that you could do in town on. You know what I mean? Like, skate on.
Oh.
In a circle.
Interesting.
But we could skate on it.
Huh. Yeah.
You know? Things like that.
So then, what's the first time you came to Big Sur?
We came when I was a child.
So with your parents?
We would visit here and go camping. Actually, one of my earliest memories is of kind of being in the wilderness and going camping.
Here?
Now that I remember, like, I don't remember exactly where we were going camping. What did my dad say that was? But I told him about this memory, and he was like, oh, you were little. You were, like, on my back.
That's cool.
At that age. And I was like, yeah, I think, yeah, I was being carried, that's for sure. And I remember seeing the eyes at night while we were walking somewhere from, like, deer or something. And my dad, like, shined the flashlight at me. I was like, oh, the deer. And I remember, like, that memory.
That's your memory.
Well. Yeah, that's the memory.
Cool. Do you feel like you have a lot of deer medicine in your life? Or, like, a connection with them? Or
I don't know. Not really. I really like the hawks as a spiritual animal. I see them a lot. And they always kind of tell me I'm in the right direction or getting a good sign.
When they show up.
Mm-hmm. When I see them, or especially when I find a feather, or sometimes like when I find a hawk, you know, like dead, and make an offering, and I'm able to get the, like, the tail, the wings, the beak, and use them for
your crafting
bands, special
and ritual,
ritualistic
ritual objects,
crafts. Yeah,
I had a cool vision the other day. I was actually in a sacred space and we were journeying, dream journeying, and I was. You know, have you ever heard of people going into animals as their others so they can like see through the animals?
Love that.
And I had that experience flying as a hawk, and it was awesome. I was like, oh, this is the eagle can show us this perspective. And I had thought about it logically, but see, that experience of taking that on was really cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even mean to. It was just, like, you know, shows up, and you're just like, oh, like lucid dreaming or anything.
I love that.
Yeah.
I've had some, like, kind of visions, too, when I was on a lot of acid. But
that'll happen.
But of, like, you know, the animals and the trees especially. Being like the ultimate Buddhas already. They're pretty much, they're there already. Like the animals are a little more in the monkey mind still. And the trees are there. They're like in the full enlightenment already. That's why they're so rooted and set in one place. They're in such a meditation, they don't have to do anything or go anywhere. They're just, they're taking it in, photosynthesis, man. They're just,
and putting it out.
They're set, they're enlightened up. They're like,
rooted deep, reaching deep in the earth.
And hundreds of years of sustainability, you know, just incredible resilience.
Teachers.
Yeah, that strength is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And especially around here, seeing the redwoods, I mean, I've never been here before, so I saw the biggest tree I've ever seen in my life today, and just in these aren't even, like, oh, go to this spot to see the redwoods. This is just like some hiking trail off the highway, and damn, that's really huge.
Yeah, and if you think of the, if you think of the meditation more seriously too, like if you tried to sit still for like an hour straight and meditate and not move,
right,
and not move at all, like the tree, it's really hard to even do like half an hour now without moving a bit, one bit.
But we're not trees, we're humans, we have legs.
Yeah, we're meant to walk. Who's not to say that the trees once walked and are...
That's a good question.
Now rooted, right?
But fully, they do walk. Rooted. They do walk through their pollination and seed setting, and I mean, all plants walk. That's
exactly. There's the cycle.
The plant walk.
Yeah, the natural cycle. Kind of the they same walk way just we do a lot with our children. How we like spread our seed to our children. They get to spread a little farther than us in the span of time, but just a little bit farther.
Different or whatever.
And then they get to have their children that go a little bit further in the span of time.
Oh, so psychedelic, yeah. But what about the singularity, man?
I love it.
What is your working name of the place?
Well, that's kind of a work in progress.
Yeah.
Dabu Daj is kind of the thing for the overall title for everything.
Dabu Dage.
Yeah. And it's more like a essence of spirit and place. It's kind of like a Zen thing. And a balance. It's about balance. And it's about everything and not about everything, you know? It's like
so
it
Zen.
Is and it isn't. it's black and it's white. It's hard to explain. Really, that's kind of like how this place is also a duality, in that it could be a beautiful place for healing and also a place for, you know, growth and change that might not feel good sometimes. You know.
Right. But I feel oftentimes like we don't have to go, not all growth has to be from a struggle or strife, but sometimes these things come up for us to work through.
Yeah, exactly.
And shift, and
a lot of people when they come here can't handle this land. It's a very strong place.
Oh, really?
Not just Big Sur, but the coast alone, but also this place in particular, I feel, has a very strong energy, and that's what makes this place we feel such a spiritual place. And that's why we want to set it up as also a place for people to practice whatever spirituality they feel spiritual with.
Yeah.
Here. As long as it's in respect to everyone else around them.
And to the land.
Exactly.
How have you been working with the plants as partners on this land?
Yeah, exactly. We've been looking at what's already existing here a lot and adding to it to complement it rather than like taking away so much.
Right, rather than clearing, it's your same principle of what's here.
Yeah.
How is it succeeding? Can we emulate that?
Yeah, exactly.
Can we further that? So what's been one of your biggest struggles or failures with that method or with that?
Oh, the ruggedness of this land is incredible. Oh, my goodness.
Like, what do you mean?
It's very rocky, tumultuous, very rugged. Hard to get to certain areas, so hard to get to many areas, actually, you know, like, we dream of doing this and that with certain areas of the property, and it's, you know, it's a dream for now, because it's really hard to even get over there. you know.
You gotta climb and clear things and haul things.
Rubbish through brush. Huh. There's not even a trail over there yet, so how would you build a cabin? But man, it's a cool place for a cabin.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Imagine what it was like for the first people who came out here.
They hiked all the way here and on trails and on horseback, hauling gear on burros and stuff.
Wow.
There's a road called Los Burros Road.
Burros would be a good way to travel through this landscape, I think.
Yeah, actually. Very good way. I was thinking I want horses, but I want Arabians.
They're
sure-footed and shorter and smaller, and they'd be better at, like...
Stocky.
They're light,
like
more
goats.
Light, and they'd be easier to get, like, up and over rocks and things and logs.
Mm-hmm.
But still be a good horse, you know?
that you could ride into, like, the backcountry.
What kind of people do you see coming out here? Is there a theme to them, or is it all over the place?
Usually a lot of people who are seeking being in nature. They want to see the nature. They want to hike. They want to see the beaches. They want to experience that. You want to see the sights, you know, like the popular waterfalls and things like that. And a lot of people come for spirituality to this coast. They really do, a lot of them. They're like trying to get away and they like are drawn here to something.
What do you think makes it so spiritual?
I think it's the isolation of it. Mm-hmm. Part of it, a big part of it, because you have to be able to handle it and be ready for it and go into it if you're gonna come and spend time here, especially.
So you have to really be willing to sit with yourself and sit with nature and sit with the land, because you don't have electricity, you don't have TV or the internet or phones even. You have what's in front of you.
The plants.
Your imagination, the plants.
What we can create with our hands.
What music you can play on an instrument.
Yeah, and what we can cook from what we grow. Mm-hmm. Hopefully from what we grow more and more. That kind of thing.
And who we can like share it with and invite here. The people.
We can like, entertain with them.
Mm-hmm.
And meet with them and have fun.
And they entertain
them.
You, bringing things
and
from all over.
And it's pretty fun, yeah. It's pretty cool, actually, people coming and visiting us. We like it when people visit, because it's interaction. It's not just us hanging out, just the two of us.
That's like your Facebook is people coming to visit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me
like
about...
Like we were talking about that earlier, that thing about going back 100 years, and like...
Right.
My friend had that good point earlier when I was saying it'd be so fun to just, like, start writing letters again and just do that as a consistent way of communication. And she said something like, well, yeah, letters probably come every day here, right? And, like, that's a good way for people to contact you because...
It's daily.
Yeah, it's daily. And you are here every day, but you don't go see the internet every day. So that's the only other way that people really would contact us here is when we go connect online at a little cafe.
Yeah.
But...
Do they have computers there? Do you have to bring your own?
We bring our own.
Yeah.
And we don't really do that often. We really do not. We try not to even do it once. Usually.
Once a what?
When we're here.
Oh.
Every week. We go to town like one day a week. If that. Sometimes we stay here a couple days, a couple weeks.
Uh-huh.
We stock up.
Tell me about how being out here has changed your relationship with plants.
I'm definitely like just learning to listen to them more.
And how do you listen
to them? That's for sure. And letting them teach me what they want and watching them grow, seeing what helps them and what they like and what they need. That's definitely what I've learned. It's not like anything in particular, right? And not very, specific, but also quite specific, because it's really all just about observation and being able to observe. And a lot of people don't sit and get still enough to observe.
Slow down. Go on, move on plant speed.
Yeah. And then notice what they are actually asking for. Okay. We're done here.
Cool. Beautiful. So what is your kind of economic model and what was your inspiration?
We want to be fully donation based and have every service that we provide or every craft that we make be totally just tradable or donation acceptable or free. So sometimes a lot of things we make will just be free.
And where'd you get this idea?
If you feel like giving a donation, you could. A lot of our ideals are based off rainbow gathering. Which are also based off of Native American ideals, just basic Native American ideals of community and love and sharing and
abundance.
Yeah, peace.
In nature and...
And the universal law of giving and sharing and, you know, letting others receive so that you may receive from the earth, you know?
Yeah.
So this is the magic, right?
This is the magic.
This is really the magic here. It's like being able to do stuff like this and have an abundant food-bearing wild land. Still, this is Eden, you know? Like, truly still exists. Everyone just lives in the city. But that's what keeps it. The wild land is that most everyone's in the city. They're not putting their footprint here.
True.
And shrouding it. We don't want to play it up how too wonderful it is.
This sucks. Don't come here.
But you know, that's what the land does to edit people.
Oh.
Because
it filters them.
It's very, very rough. Like I said already.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a very brutal mistress and unforgiving. She will tell you right away what you need to do to respect her. And if you don't respect her, you'll know. You'll remember.
Thank you so much for listening. I want to encourage you to check out the photos I took during my stay here so you can see this place for yourself, even though no photo will ever do it justice. You can see the pictures at dreamfreedombeauty.com on the show notes page for this episode, episode 21. And if you're interested in staying at Dabu Dodge, you can get more information at dabudodge.com. That's dabudage.com. You can also check out their wish list on their website, where they have things like fruit trees and fabrics that they would like to receive. Or you can send them a donation through PayPal. And that's all. You can do all of that through their website, dabudodge.com. And you can find a link to their website from our show notes page at dreamfreedombeauty.com. Also, thank you to everyone who signed up for the 30-day manifesting challenge. We have begun our journey. So if you've signed up and you haven't gotten any emails from us, please let us know so we can fix that. Thank you so much.